Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Fourth Age Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. I, of course, am Virginia, and with us tonight we have Daniel.
Hi, Virginia. I'm happy to be on the podcast again this evening. And also, as always with us, we have Spencer.
Hey, everyone. We don't have Andrew or Carrie with us tonight, but we do have us three. And so our topic tonight we're going to talk about is Varen's letters.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
These things have sparked wide interest. I mean, especially at the end of Towers of Midnight, where we finally found out what Matt's letter said, which confirmed or completely destroyed several theories about what his letter entailed and what that might mean for what the other letters entailed. So first off, Virginia, can you give us a rundown of all the letters that we know for sure we've seen?
Well, I can. I have a feeling that I'm missing something, but we know the ones that I can recall for certain are, we know that, of course, Rand got one when he visited the White Tower. One of the Aes Sedai came up to him and gave it to him. We don't know what he did with it. We don't know if he even read it. It wasn't mentioned again. I think he just put it in his pocket. And then later on in the book, I may have these out of order, but I know that Alana got a letter and promptly disappeared with it from the Stone of Tyr, causing great consternation among Cad Swain and the Aes Sedai in residence at that moment in time. And then also we know that Galad, the Lord Captain Commander of the White Cloaks, got a letter. And how that was delivered to him, I have no idea. I think there's another one, but I can't recall it, so we may think of it as we go along.
We obviously know what was in Matt's letter, and, you know, the theories and speculation ran rampant. My favorite before I actually read the book was that it would be something to do with the Horn of Valyr, because we knew that Varen and Suwan were really the only people who knew where it was. But no, it turns out to be something a little bit kind of out of the blue, in my opinion. I don't know about what you guys think, but, you know, she warns him that the Waygate that was in Camelin has been opened. And then, of course, we pan up and see Camelin in flames, because Matt never opened the letter. Ulver did, with Talmanes. So based on that information, what do you think it is that she would have sent to the others? And let's start with an easy one. What do you think that she would have put in a letter to Rand?
A blaster who is really a good guy have to say to the Dragon Reborn. There are so many things, and yet I can't even think of which one to start with.
Could it be a warning about what's going on within the Black Tower? I mean, there's no evidence necessarily that the Black Aja within the White Tower has any conduit or any connection to what's going on, shall we say, within the Black. But I wonder if there's a pathway between them.
That's a definite possibility.
Or if they're in contact with some of the Forsaken and might know, you know, something of what's going on there.
Yeah. And you know, that was kind of the thing that I first thought, but then I thought, you know, I think there might be some things that are more important for the Dragon Reborn to know about the Dark One in general than the fact that Moradin is Taim, or whatever it is that she would be telling him about the Black Tower.
Well, I think Moradin is probably running Taim. I don't think he is Taim, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I just threw that out there to spark controversy.
Well, I guess the thing to do would be to approach it from the direction of what would Vera know that Rand wouldn't. I know she did mention to Egwene that what he thought was going to happen, that the way the last battle, how did she phrase it, the way the last battle was going to be fought was nothing like what he was thinking.
Yeah, the way he thinks the last battle is going to be fought is nothing like it's actually going to be done.
So what is that warning? Is the warning that there'll be some... Is she giving Rand some kind of advice in terms of how to win against the Dark One in the final battle? Is that what's within the content of the letter?
Well, that's what I would think, but...
Some weakness that he could exploit, perhaps.
I wonder if this has to do with, there's a little, it's kind of like an offhanded thing where Rand disappears, it's a few chapters later. There's a point where he leaves briefly and says he needed to go fetch something. And that was after he was given the letter. And I'm wondering if that might have had something to do. Did she tell him about something? I'm going to have to trot out my favorite horse that I beat constantly. I don't know if it's dead yet or not, but the missing Songrail that everybody poo-pooed when we had our conversation with Jason and Jennifer that Lanfers referred to when she had Rand in the Stone of Tyr. When she said there are two male Songrail that I know more powerful than Kalendor. One I know exists, which we presume was the Choden Cow. And then it's never mentioned again, and she just drops it. And Rand goes racing off to try and get Kalendor, but she's left up in his room like an idiot. If there is a really powerful Angriel, or even a Turangriel, and then again, I tried out the other part of the team of probably dead horses, the missing item that Nynaeve and Elaine were looking for with Need, and they ended up in the White Tower first, and said, oh, well, we can't get it there, let's see if we can find something else. Well, there's still that first thing that will help the dragon reborn. So those are my two things. Maybe she knows of one of those two things, told him about it, where to find it, and that's what he ran off to fetch.
So can you also remind me, Virginia, of the chronology of this? Is Varen dead by the time the letter's delivered to Rand?
Yes.
Yes, I believe so.
Because Rand gets the letter right when he goes to visit Egwene after she's been raised to Ommerlin.
That's right. Because the piece that I also sort of that puzzles me is how her oaths allowed her to write the letters. Varen's oaths as a member of the Black Aja would have prevented her from doing anything until the hour of her death and would have caused, any harm to the cause of the Black.
Right.
So the question is, how was she able to write the letters within that binding oath?
Well, the oath itself says, I swear not to betray the great lord, to keep my secrets until the hour of my death. And so if she could plan it out properly, she was very careful with the timing that she gave to Matt of when he could open the letter and how long he would have to wait to open the letter or to not open the letter or what have you. So if she was very careful with the timing, then she could get around that. Think about this. She's an Aes Sedai, and they practice the art of getting around their oaths constantly. Mm-hmm. Because the way to get around the oath is to convince yourself that you're not breaking it.
The only counter I have to that is she seems, and I know we're moving now back to sort of Matt's letter, but she convinces herself as well that Matt will open it.
And that does seem a little counterintuitive, is that she convinces herself that Matt's going to open it before the date that she convinces herself it should be opened on. That doesn't really make sense.
Well,
and so I don't have a good answer for that.
He wouldn't open it until the time period, either she came back or 30 days had passed, and she was convinced he'd keep that oath. The first was, she was dead. She expected not to survive a day, and she just figured that when she didn't come back the next day, he'd open it because of his curiosity. She would have been dead then. She didn't send the letter. I intended to return immediately, like the next day, I think that she said, and release you from your oath. But if I hadn't come back, that means I'm dead.
Yeah, she definitely had hoped that she would be able to get her hands on the oath rod and be able to remove her oaths that way.
Yeah, she was putting a lot of stock in being able to release herself or bind herself from the oaths. What a shame that Pavara and company had the bloody thing out. Seems like kind of poor planning on Viren's part in a way. I think she could be bothered to come into the tower. She'd be bothered to come in and find out if the people that she needed to people and the things she needed were there.
But, although she does say in The Gathering Storm that she set several plans in motion to be seen to in case she doesn't return. Right? Is that a veiled reference to these letters?
Yeah, probably.
I believe it is, yes. And about her, and about the whole missing oath rod and such, until the Black Aja hunters came along, most of the sisters who weren't Black Aja, and even I think probably presumably a lot of them that were, just didn't mess with it, because its use was putting on and taking off oaths, and those only happened at specific times.
As far as the White Tower goes, it's only used for putting on the oaths. Most of them don't even know that it can be used to remove them.
Yeah, the Black Aja knew, was more specifically, but still, except in those moments of kind of ceremonial usage, they left it alone. And so she had no reason to believe that it would be missing when it wasn't, when these ceremonies weren't taking place. So she had no knowledge of Pavara's group, and Pavara obviously is at the Black Tower at the point when she comes black, but
yeah.
She is, isn't she? I'm not making stuff up here.
The timeline, I have to confess, does sort of grapple me sometimes. It may be, I do get confused with the overlap. It's mainly in parent sections, but I do sometimes a little confused with what's where. There was somebody who did a great post about where everything was. I think it was on the errata and, you know, errors blog post section on Dragon, where people could post when they found mistakes. Somebody did a whole timeline of how everything was and compared to the chapter Veins of Gold, which was kind of the pivot around everything.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely would be the best chapter to try and pivot, to try and anchor the Perrin stuff down. But I'm pretty sure that by the time that Varen got to the White Tower, that the Black Aja hunters, bonders, whatever, from the White Tower Embassy, Pavara and Javindra and those, had already gone. And so whoever was left in charge of the hunters in the tower, yeah, that was Elida and Tarna, basically. Well, Elida, Tarna, and the Red Aja got together and said, the Reds all have to go and bond these Ashaman male channelers, because heaven forbid that they have any form of freedom.
Yeah, I don't think Elida was part of that. I think they kept that secret from her. That was something that Tutsama, or whatever it is, directed the Reds to do, based on the conversations with Tarna. I think they basically just decided to keep Elida out of the loop because they knew she'd freak out.
Well, didn't Elida would have to know something, because Tarna was her keeper of the Chronicles. So whether or not she knew what she disappeared for, she wouldn't know that she disappeared, and so did two Red Sitters and some other, well, not lots of others, but
some others. Well, I think a lot of times they just do what they want and write it off as a business of the Ajas, you know.
Don't get me started on the command structure of the Aes Sedai.
What there is of it anymore.
I was going to say, So the other piece that I found interesting is Varen's letter to Matt really, ideally should have handled both possibilities, right? The possibility that he'd read it and close the Waygate, or the possibility that the attack would begin. So what went wrong?
Varen hadn't spent as much time with Matt recently and didn't realize that he had changed character so much. She didn't realize that he was no longer kind of this curious, flighty, you know, the cliché trickster. He's still kind of the trickster, but he's not the cliché trickster.
What about the 50-day thing, right? So shouldn't, you know, I mean,
30 days,
he left, and I thought it was 50 days.
It might have started at 50 days, and then it changed. I don't recall.
He brought it down,
and I can look it up.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the 50 days would have actually gotten us to the point of the attack on Gamelin. And by sort of bringing it down to 30, I'm trying to remember now. I thought the original was a 50-day, and maybe he did sort of negotiate it down. It just seems, you know, very convenient that Matt happens to have left just before the attack.
Let's see. They start out where she says, I'll take you to Gamelin if you will take this letter and do what it says. And he says, I'm absolutely not going to do that. And she says, okay, you just stay in Gamelin for 50 days, and then I'll take you to Gamelin, and you stay there for 50 days, and then you can go about. Well, they come down to 30 days. They compromise on 30, and she gives him the letter in case he changes his mind. I don't think she knew when the attack would happen, and so she was trying to get him. I think the 30 days was to give her time, and if she did end up dying, you know, then hopefully he would have read the letter by then. The 50 days, I think, was so that he would be in Camelin when the attack came.
I guess, yeah, like you said, she didn't know when it was actually going to start, because that struck me as she basically said in the letter that Trollocs are using the Ways. And, I mean, it only takes a couple of days to travel from any place to any place in the Ways. So,
yeah,
how did
which
she
means that they weren't on
days?
Their way. Well, my biggest question is how long after the 30 days did it take him to get to the Tower of Genji, to get Moraine and get back out of the Tower of Genji? Because
well,
to my mind, they didn't have a gate. Did they get a gateway to the tower?
Yep. Grady, I think, did it for him, didn't he?
Yep.
Oh, yes.
No.
Oh, yes. Okay, thank you for reminding me of that. So it shouldn't have taken them too long. But we have a good timeline of what happened, of when the events in Camelin happened, based on what happened to Matt, because Ulver wins Snakes and Foxes. And through questions that have been asked on the tour route, Brandon has basically said, yes, that happened because Matt had beat the Finn in their own game.
Oh,
and so Ulver won Snakes and Foxes. Yeah, and so Ulver won Snakes and Foxes, and it's never ever going to happen again. And so we know that those happened at about the same time. So however long it took Matt to get in and out of the Tower of Genji, basically, is how long past the 30 days the attack occurred. I can't imagine that it would be more than a day or two, because they spent that 30 days getting ready, so that as soon as he was released from his oath, he could go.
So this goes back to the question of how did Varen know that an attack was coming? What, you know, she must have been involved at some point in some kind of either from a research perspective, she found it out, or she was involved in the sort of setup of the plot.
Yeah, we have to assume that she was a dark friend of some power and influence for her to know all these things. Obviously, as a Black Aja, she would have been a Dreadlord. Well, I guess not obviously. If she raised through the ranks high enough, she would have been a Dreadlord. And I think that they probably have a little bit more knowledge than the other kind of lesser dark friends. Obviously, we had a Dreadlord attacking Meridon. We had the one that was warping in Trollocs with the portal stones on top of the white cloaks. So
yep.
We've seen Dreadlords in action in this book. So we know that there are Dreadlords. We know that there are channelers working for the dark, who are actually actively out there using their abilities with the One Power in a destructive faction. So we have to assume that there was planning and meetings and stuff going on before this to get them all in place to do what they needed to do. Otherwise, it would be complete chaos, which wouldn't ever win any wars. Obviously, the Lord of Chaos is supposed to rule, but you get too much chaos on your side, and you don't win anything.
So I find it interesting. The timing is, you know, based on that sort of summary, the timing, Varen's timing in terms of Matt's departure is just so slightly off, right? If she stuck to her original 50 days, he would have been there when the attack began.
Well, I have to wonder if maybe some of that is miscalculation on Matt's part. Wonder if we'll find out later that his 30 days ended up being, you know, 29 from the time that she intended it to start, or if he had started counting differently than she did.
Interesting. Interesting.
Because, you know, like we say, with the timing, he's one, maybe 2 days off of when the attack starts. Of course, I think the desired effect is still had, because sure, Matt is gone with Tom and Noel, who is no longer with them, and now they've got Moraine. But the Band of the Red Hand is still within spitting distance of Camelin.
Yeah,
they aren't actually inside the city, but they're close enough that they can get there
and she even
help
them
support
closer.
The.
You know,
yeah,
steel,
because
she had to move inside closer.
Yeah, because they weren't actually the others were mercenary camps, and this one wasn't really, kind of, but not really, a mercenary camp.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, obviously, they're led by the Prince of the Ravens. He can't die. Haven't you heard the rumors, Virginia?
Yes, I have.
Yes, Virginia, there is a sequel.
Yeah, he dies with death and is told his future. And
yeah, man, it's amazing.
The magnificent, indestructible Matron Coffin.
Yep.
That was a little play, by the way. And yes, Virginia, there was a Santa Claus.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. Wow.
I'm sure.
I'm sure. No, Virginia, your little friends are wrong. There is a dragon reborn.
I believe there is.
I'm sorry.
It does also raise the question, though, if there's going to be a battle in Camelot or a battle for Camelot, is that
obviously?
Yes, and you know, my question, I guess, is listen, we've got one book left. So where is that going to play in terms of the last battle? Is this, in a sense, the start of the last battle? Does it begin in Camelot, the real last battle?
You know, I don't know about that. Obviously, there's also the battle that's happening at Tarwyn's Gap with Lon and his companions and however many thousands of people followed him. But I'll confess right now, I'm not really a hardcore fan freak. I'm a fan freak, but not hardcore. And so when I tread into the Theoryland waters, I'm in way over my head. I do recall theories that I've read on the Theoryland boards that include the last battle or a portion of the last battle, because we know that we can kind of assume that the last battle, quote unquote, is going to be an actual war. So a lot of the theories include the idea that significant amount of the last battle is going to take place in or around Camelot, which I think is mostly derived from Arthurian legend that Camelot and Camelot are meant to be the same, are in many respects, you know, Camelot is in many respects derived from Camelot. And obviously the parallels between Arthur Hawkwing and Arthur are obvious, are quite blatant. So I think that we are going to see a lot of action taking place in Camelot. Like I say, I'm not a HCFF, so I don't know how much, but there's definitely a battle going there. I just don't know how much of the last battle it's going to be.
Just to carry that on a second, Tom Merwin? Merwin?
Yeah. Oh, we could do a whole show, and we probably will after A Memory of Light is out. We'll probably do a whole show or several shows on the ties in the Wheel of Time to legends and fables and epics of the past.
Yeah, it's a book in itself almost. And one thing I want to mention while we're still talking about Varin's letter is she specifically tells Matt that they need to destroy the Waygate. And I seem to recall, I thought it was Loyal, but it could have been one of the elders of the Ogier, telling them that Waygates weren't that easy to destroy and that an attempt was made back in da-da-da-da-da involving 15 or 12 or whatever number of Aes Sedai, and it went very badly wrong and ended up with a couple of them being sucked into or drawn into the void, and then they were shut off by somebody interrupting them. So I'd have to go back and look that up, and I don't remember exactly where it is, so I don't have time now, but surely she might have known that.
I remember that too, Virginia. And I also, I may be making this up, I hope not, but I seem to remember that Loyal and the elders were asked to take care of closing the Waygates. So what happened? Why is this one either opened or reopened?
Well, for one thing, there's no setting near Camelot anymore. It was built over, so they really don't have any control, and they're not going to travel to do it. I mean, they were reluctant to even set a guard on it. Some of them, every steading was a little different. Some of them agreed to do something about it, others didn't. I don't think they can permanently close the Waygate except by, if they remove the two of Endosoral leaves, they'll die, and then the gate is closed until somebody brings the Talisman of Growing, which coincidentally Elaine has found in the cache in Abadar.
Well, and also we know from Eye of the World that with enough of the power, you can blast a hole through the door, and so you don't even need the leaves.
Yeah, you can hold through it.
So in my mind, that's probably what they did to get in, was either cut a hole through it or they have a talisman of growing. I think it's more likely that they cut a hole in it, just because that seems like more like what a Dreadlord would do.
But I don't think they needed to, because I don't think that the one in Camlann was necessarily even really being guarded.
Well, it wasn't being guarded, but she did say people will think that it's locked, which means that the Avendisora leaves have been removed from both sides.
Oh, okay.
We know that that's the general idea of a way gate is locked when the Avendisora leaves have been removed from both sides. We saw in the Battle for the Two Rivers, which was Shadow Rising, that Loyal says, I thought it would be locked, but I forgot that, you know, there's a leaf on this side, and so people can open it from here. So they go back and they finally close it, and that takes them, what, a week or two before they come back,
mm-hmm.
before Loyal and Gaul come back all bloodied up. And
Loyal
so,
carrying Gaul, actually. That must have been humiliating for Gaul.
Yeah. It's not quite riding a horse, because there's more intelligence, but anyway. and so I think Elaine probably would have had maybe a guards person or two on it, but they would have thought, it's locked, so we don't need to worry about it. So actually probably more likely just a watchman.
Yeah.
If anything. But if that thing gets bloated up, there's not much you can do about it. I'm pretty sure that the Talisman of Growing respond not to manipulations of the One Power, but to singing, with a capital S. And so to my mind, you would need an Ogier to actually, or someone with the voice, which is, I believe, a talent that was first introduced in the prologue of Eye of the World. But someone would need to sing to the talisman to get it to grow, which it's not impossible, but I would be very surprised if anyone of the Dreadlords, or anyone else for that matter, of the Dark Friends, would, one, have the voice, and two, know the song needed to activate a talisman of growing, if indeed they had one in their possession, which isn't unreasonable to assume. But the fact that they have one in their possession, they have someone with the voice who was working with them, who knew the song, I think that might be stretching it a little bit. Although I guess maybe a couple of the Forsaken would know the song. No, because they would have been locked in the boars when the ways were made. So
are there any Dark Friend Oak here?
I assume not. Just the same as there aren't any of Trollocs or Maedrol who work for the Light. To me, they seem like those are the only counterparts to them, and that they are opposites. The Nim and the Ogier are the opposite of the Maedrol and the Trollocs, to my mind. And again, I could be completely erroneous in that thought.
No, so you know, we have Matt's letter, which certainly talks about the Camlann battle. We know when she gives the letter to Matt that there are other letters there. There's one for Galad. There's one for Rand. Where are the other letters going?
She had a bunch of them.
And what do they say?
I don't know. Well, we know what Rand's... Well, we presume we know what Rand said, which was where to find King Absalom in the Carolyn Grass. Remember, he trotted him out for Rodola Giralda.
And is Galad a sort of missive telling him about his relationship with Rand?
I'm sorry?
His relationship. Is Galad's a letter that explains his relationship to Rand?
Would she know that relationship?
I don't know. That's another interesting question.
What did you ask that? Does she know? Yeah, she knows.
How does she know?
She was there when he was being interviewed by Swan and was told some of his history. Didn't they mention, wasn't it sort of brought out that Tigraine was probably the one? Maybe that came later with the Aiel. Maybe she doesn't know.
The Aiel talked about a wetlander who became an Aiel and married. I think it ran so far, as we know, is the only one that's made the connection between that wetlander and Tigraine because of his dealings with the royal house of Andor. Or the royals of Andor who are all like, you know, you look a lot like Tigraine.
I think that probably Varen could have put it together from what she did know, though.
What other instructions could she have for him?
Oh, and we've touched on it briefly when we were talking earlier, how to go about fighting the last battle and where he's wrong about how he thinks it's going to be fought, she mentioned to Egwene that he was completely in the dark about, or just wrong about how he thought that the last battle would be fought. And again, I have my pet theory about how he'll take it into Teleronriad so that he doesn't destroy the world and do the breaking again. But, you know, that's a crazy theory.
Here's a question, an interesting question about the letter that Galad ended up with. Do you think she wrote it for Galad Damodred, or do you think she wrote it for the Lord Captain Commander of the White Cloaks?
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
We are sort of falling into the trap of assuming that because she was a Darkman, she had access to all kinds of information that we don't know that she had. So, yeah, good question, maybe. But, you know, why would any Aes Sedai even expect the Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light to even open a letter from one of the witches or give it any credence if he did? I think it had to be for Galad because she knew. And probably, my guess would be that she's telling him about the relationship that he has with the Dragon Reborn. Hey, he's your half-brother, dude. He's not heavy,
yeah.
He's your brother.
Yeah, well, the only way that it would be for the Lord Captain Commander is if she went through, like she did with Rand, if she went through an intermediary and somewhere along the line, you know, the information that it comes from an Aes Sedai gets lost.
Well, it was Tiana that gave Rand the letter, his letter, the new Mistress of Novices, the Mistress of Novices in Selenar. And this is stupid. And she only agreed to do it because she never thought he'd come to their, either Selenar or the White Tower. You know, why take it if she didn't ever think it'd be delivered? Well, that's dumb.
When someone who's higher in the power than you tells you to do something, you agree?
Yeah, but I mean, whatever. I don't know. I'm probably wrong about that. Yeah, I guess she kind of have to do it. But she said, I mean, she implied that she had a choice, that if she actually had thought he was coming, she wouldn't have taken it. So she could have said no to there, and apparently.
Maybe it was just for you to say yes, get her out of your hair.
Yeah.
On the assumption you never have to deliver. But see, this goes back to the question of what would happen to that letter had Rand not showed. It just seems like such a, you know, there's such risk that Zarin took in writing them. That every single conduit would work the way she had planned it.
I just don't know why, you know, she had some time in the last hour before her death. I don't know why she didn't just tell all this stuff to Egwene as a backup.
It's a great question. Mm-hmm. Maybe she didn't want Egwene to know.
Why? Why she not
if Egwene knew that Trollocs were coming to Camelot, she'd divert her attention there. Maybe there's some other thing that Egwene needs to be doing that involves her not spending or focusing on Camelot. I mean, she's still got, you know, the Seanchan to deal with.
I wonder if the Seanchan got any letters. Suppose Tuon got a letter. How much did Varen know? I mean, you know, that's really the question.
And how high up was she within the Black Aja itself? But it's really, those two questions are predicated on, the answers are predicated on each other, I think.
Yeah. So the other two letters that we know about that I can remember is the one to Alana. And I think that's one of the most problematic in my mind, because we know that Varen disapproved of Alana bonding him. And Rand said after she decamped that it probably didn't matter because the shadow couldn't really use her to find him anymore. They knew exactly where he was anyway. All their eyes were turned on him until he blinded them. But still, Alana must have some importance. She must have some significance. So what in the world could Varen have told her that would have made her run off like that? I guess the thing that we didn't talk about with Matt's letter is, why wasn't it where to find the Horn of Valyr? That's what I thought it would be. Maybe that's, maybe that's something she also told Van. Maybe that's the other thing he went to fetch. As far as I know, Swan and Varen were going to hide it someplace where only they would know. We were assuming it's in the White Tower, but we don't know that. They said they were going to hide it where only they two would know. So where is the bloody thing? Needs to be with Matt, right? Unless he dies.
Well, it needs to be with Matt at the time he needs to blow it. So the question is, when is that and where is that? So
right.
if that's in Camelot, right, which I doubt, if it's where Lan's going to be, then that's a whole different matter. And maybe that's Alana's instruction, is to retrieve it. I mean, the piece that I still struggle with Alana
is, you know, I understand there's got to be a deeper purpose for Rand being bonded to her. I think we'll play out in the end, and I don't think we've heard it yet. So, you know, in part, does sending her away from Rand, you know, bring us closer to that plot resolution?
What's really weird is, I mean, she's been away from Rand for most of the book.
Right.
And he finally lets her come back, and then he sends her off again. And now they were sort of in proximity because he was back to Tyr and she was in Tyr. She gets the letter from Vir and she's gone again. I mean, they've actually spent, like, what, 20 minutes together in the last 2 years? They spent almost no time together. When they got together in Farmatting, he sent her right off to Clarion, and then she ended up in Tyr. If she's important, it certainly hasn't been evidenced so far.
It is sort of like trying to weave together a tapestry from loose threads again. You know, I mean, you wonder how all of this is going to be resolved in the final telling. But there's so much used from you all have used before, and this Brandon is used. There's so much narrative debt that's owed.
It's kind of baffling, in a way. I honestly just don't know how he's going to tie all this up in one more book.
It'll be an ebook only release at 7,000 pages.
But it's kind of a complex little story, really. It still makes me wonder if there's a little tiny nagging doubt in my head that maybe Varen's really, really a dark friend. Maybe she's doing all this just to sow more chaos. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think that.
Yeah, I can't believe that either.
Want that is the one thing. I love Varen, and I was really, would have been really, really desolate if she had been her true dark friend.
No, but I mean, but that said, she could have had plans that had been spoiled by others, or, you know, I mean, the best laid plans oft go astray. So, you know, it's true that even if she were, you know, a dark friend light, if you will, that her best hopes, no, I do like that, yeah, dark friend light, that her best hopes of resolution might not have worked out the way she had planned. Yeah. And we're seeing some of that, you know, when, in a world where chaos, you know, does happen, sometimes these things occur.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. It sure seems to me that we saw one other letter in the book. I mean, they're all mentioned almost as an aside, you know, so it's really easy to kind of skip over it when you just try to fly through and see what's going on. I can't think of who it would have been to.
As we do our reread, we'll have to keep an eye out for who gets letters from Varen and when.
There are definitely some interesting ramifications to some of these. I guess I'm like a lot of people where I really do feel somewhat disappointed or possibly even cheated at Nat's letter. It wasn't at all what I was expecting, and I thought it was sort of underwhelming, and I don't know why we really need an attack on Caemlyn at this point in the book. There's obviously a larger picture that I don't know, so... you know, that's the thing. I wonder if she sent one to Nazrim Taim.
I'm sure she sent one to Shadow Haran, too.
Yeah. I have to agree with something that I read on one of the posts on Theoryland here, which is that the logistics, I mean, they kind of went into it with the gateways, you know, moving, Theron wanted to move all the people back, and the Ashaman weren't too sure how well that was going to work, and then Seven Balwer did some calculations and said that, you know, it would take hours and hours and hours if the way game was this big and blah, blah, blah. And somebody did a little calculation, you know, how many Trollocs could get through the doorway in a minute. You know, the way gates are big enough for a horse to get through. They don't have to squeeze out, but, you know, how big is that basement? It's only going to fit X number of Trollocs, and then they have to get out in a few seconds. It's a lot of Trollocs to move out of there at night. How many Trollocs have to get out of the way gate before somebody figures it? You know, we've got a couple hundred of them in the city, and they're, where do you hide them? You're not going to be able to hide them. And they do have a lot of Chandlers in Caemlyn. It's not like, you know, I mean, there are kinswomen there. There are Aes Sedai there. There's Elaine and, you know, various other people. You know, I don't know about having... I don't know.
And what about the Mach and Shin? Because wasn't that still a problem?
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't
mm-hmm.
been resolved. So the other thing is, if you pool all of these Trollocs and Fades in one location, you know, will they be attacked by Malak and Shin as well?
Yeah. You would think it would draw them, you know.
Which would, in a sense, put more pressure to get them out as fast as possible.
Somebody mentioned that they thought that the Black Tower might have had something to do with hiding all the Trollocs, but the Black Tower is not that close to Camelin.
Too many questions. I want a letter from Varen that tells me the answers.
Yeah, exactly. We all need a letter from Varen. So Alana got a letter and vanished off, but apparently to the Borderlands. We don't know for sure, but what do you think we'd get one? You think Loghain got one? Where's Loghain, by the way? Let's see do one. He's riding off to war with his two wives and guy trailing along.
And which war is he riding off to? Is he heading toward Camelin?
I don't know. Yeah, he knows gateways. He could go anywhere.
I think, actually, I like your answer. I bet Fortuana got a letter.
I don't know what Varen would say to her, but, watch yourself with math, honey. Yeah. So, do you have any final thoughts on the mysterious letters?
Can't wait to find out what they said. And,
we know what Matt says. Matt's a done deal.
Yeah. And, I think I'm going to have to get onto Theoryland and Dragonmount forums and spend a little time looking into what people think these are, because honestly, I have no good ideas.
Well, I guess we'll find out. And I guess the other question that we need to think about until the next book is how many more are there that we do not yet know about? And we're running out of time to find out, so...
Well, as Varen would probably say, read and find out.
I'm sure Varen would say that.
Of course.
RJ definitely would. Read and find out. That was actually one of my most hated phrases for a long time. But now I have my raffle card, so I'm happy with it.
All right. Well, all
right. Well, I guess this will wrap up this episode. It seems like we're pretty much out of ideas on Varen's letters. She didn't leave us any letters, so we're pretty much in the dark. So.
But if we can encourage listeners to leave us any letters they might want. They can even pen them as Varen. We'd be happy to hear from them. If you think you know what the letter says, write us a letter that is in Varen's voice. And if it's really good, maybe we'll even read it on a future podcast.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your podcast. You guys are so out to lunch.
Yep, and you can send those letters either to podcast@dragonmount.com or you can find the forum posts for this podcast at bit.ly/4thHforums or the 4thH forums on dragonmount.com. You can find the forum post for this episode, and you can leave it in the forums there. And we'll have to read those and pick the best ones and read them on the air.
Yeah. Do we still have comments on the podcast pages, or is that disabled? I know I enable it when I post them.
Yeah, you enable it for the WordPress site, though, and that's different from the... But the main site, yeah, there's comments.
Oh, good, okay, because I haven't been keeping up with them. Yeah, me. Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for another episode. Thank you, Daniel and Spencer, for joining me tonight, and we will hopefully have you back for the next one, and hopefully Andrew and Carrie and possibly Mark will be able to join us in the near future, and possibly even some more special guests.
Thank you, Virginia. It's been a pleasure, and as I like to say, from courage to strength.
This is Virginia saying, may the light illuminate until we meet again.
And until next time, may you find water and shade.